And joining me on the phone now is David Miskell from the Mandate Trade Union. Good morning, David. How are you?
Good morning, Mark. How are you?
Very well, David. Thanks very much for joining us. David, we seen in the news last week that Dun Stores workers have overwhelmingly voted in favour of balloting for industrial action. It's all based around a few things on different issues with the employer. But one of the things that is what we're hearing a lot of now is these zero-hour contracts. And then rather than just maybe concentrating on the Dunn's issue, I was thinking maybe we could focus on these zero-hour contracts first in the context of the retail industry in general. What are these zero-hour contracts and how are they affecting workers?
Okay, well, I suppose firstly what a zero-hour contract would be, people could be working 30, 40, 20, whatever the number of hours are, regularly every week. But ultimately, all that they are contracted for is 0 hours or very low hours, which means that at the stroke of a pen on any given week, your hours can be reduced back to a number that is unsustainable in terms of, you know, your earnings, in terms of meeting your payments and everything else. And it provides limited to no certainty in terms of what you're going to make every week.
Yeah, so it's difficult then if like most people, most working class people these days, you're on a budget and you're saying, well, right, at the end of next week or at the end of the month, I'll have X amount of euros. And then suddenly you find out, well, no, you're going to be down 100 or 200 euros.
Yes, absolutely. That's exactly what the issue is. We all have rent to pay. We all have our mortgages to pay. We all have bills. We all have in or about a set amount of outgoings every week. Unfortunately, these days, they're going up rather than going down.
Mm-hmm.
But like everything else, like a budget, you have a household budget, but you simply cannot plan around that if you don't have any certainty. In fact, for example, we commissioned our own behaviour and attitude survey. It would have been now maybe in or about a year and a half ago. And out of that, a significant proportion of people said that this was one of the major difficulties with these types of contracts. You see, the debate isn't just about 0 hours contracts. It's also about very low hours contracts.
Mm.
In fact, 60% of the people that we surveyed were actually seeking extra hours. And 40% of those people have reported a fall in pay on average of about 109 euro a week.
Wow. And it's because that then, as you say, breeds uncertainty into their lives and it brings on all kinds of stresses and strains with people who are struggling to make ends meet as it is.
Yeah, absolutely. So, for example, if I go down to the credit union or if I go down to the bank or if I go down and apply for a mortgage, I may have been working even for the past year, 2 years. I may have an income of based around 40 hours, 30 hours, whatever it is. But ultimately, if on paper my hours could be reduced back to zero, if they could be reduced back to 10, or in particular, primarily in the case of Dunn, back to 15,
mm-hmm.
ultimately my repayment capacity or anyone's repayment capacity will be assessed on that basis, which again means that you're not able to compete.
Yeah.
A lot of our members, they're not able to compete in the market for loans, mortgages, and so forth. The other difficulty with that is our whole social welfare codes are constructed around Monday to Friday full-time working week. So our members, because a lot of the time hours are spread over 5 days, the traditional payment that augments your income if you're on what's called a three-day week,
yeah.
Our members and a lot of people in the retail sector are not in a position to apply for that, because these low hours then can be spread over 5 days,
yeah.
Or 6 days in some instance.
So that impacts...
You have social support, all the social supports that are there to augment situations where there is underemployment isn't applicable in the retail sector, because you're simply not able to access, you're not able to access those social insurance supports. And our members pay their taxes, they pay their social insurance the same as everyone else,
mm-hmm.
but they're simply not able to access that on the same level. Now, I should say as well, we're not advocates of using social welfare per se,
yeah.
to augment and support employers who are unwilling to provide sustainable and meaningful employment. But that said, we believe there should be supports there for people who work in the retail sector in situations where hours are reduced. But unfortunately, they're not there at the moment.
Yeah, because of that, I was just thinking here while you were saying that. I mean, like... The social welfare system is there to to help people who are on low incomes and to assist them. But what you're saying then is if somebody's getting a minimum 15-hour contract and it's getting spread out of 3 hours over 5 days, their ability then to claim social welfare is gone because they've worked for 5 days, so they can't claim for any day that they haven't worked. Is that correct?
Yes, that is the position at this point in time. The traditional, what was called a three-day week or short-time working, is all constructed around more or less a full-time working week.
Yeah.
39 hours Monday to Friday, and the short-time working piece would kick in then if you would go down to 3 days. But unfortunately, if whatever number of hours you're getting, be they 15 or be they below from 15, anything down to zero,
yeah,
you simply can't access those payments because they are spread. Your days could potentially be spread over 5 days. The social welfare codes look at it from the perspective of 5 days is full time, 3 days is short time, but that's not the reality for the vast majority of people working in the retail sector. For example, even if I look at the latest statistics from the Central Statistics Office, the trade union made a presentation to a joint Oireachtas committee on this issue,
mm-hmm.
and up to in or about 135,000 workers in Ireland are what's called underemployed, meaning that they are working on low hours and in precarious employment, which is a frightening statistic, I suppose, in the context of speaking about economic recovery.
Yeah.
And we've been quite vocal about this issue at all levels, be it government and in terms of our campaigns,
yeah,
to try and highlight this and to try and address it. And I know currently Jed Nash, the Labour Minister, they're currently looking at commissioning what's called the Low Pay Commission, which we hope will meaningfully address this issue in some way, to look at this whole area of underemployment.
Yeah, because I'm thinking here to myself, I mean, you get any number of politicians telling us, especially in the last few weeks and months, how things are getting better, employment is improving and everything else. But I'm wondering about the legality of these contracts. I mean, casual labour, if we want to call it that, those kind of contracts have been around for a long time now. But have they really become the norm now since things got so bad and now people are desperate for employment, they'll take anything? And a lot of people will take a minimum hour contract rather than stay just to get off social welfare, just to be working. And that then gives an awful lot of the power to the employers to maybe, manipulate the terms and conditions of these contracts. And, I'm just wondering about the legality of them and how we ended up with such a proliferation of them all the time. Is it just purely down to the fact that we've gone through hard times and people are prepared to take anything now?
Well, I suppose these types of contracts, unfortunately, are not illegal per se.
Mm-hmm.
The difficulty with them is it's not illegal to issue successive. The current part-time workers legislation says that up to three fixed-term contracts or temporary contracts can be issued, which is you could have a situation where there is someone working on for 3 to 4 years on these fixed-term contracts. They're not illegal, unfortunately. Eventually, after the third one, an employer will be obliged to either renew it or give a valid reason as to why it cannot be made into a contract of indefinite duration. So they're not illegal. But I suppose that's the difference between something that's illegal and something that's immoral or something that's wrong.
Yeah.
When we speak about economic recovery and when we hear these jobs, we hear about jobs being advertised. I would urge anyone, when they hear those announcements, to question, well, what kind of jobs are they?
Yeah.
Are they full-time jobs? Are they jobs that people can have a sustainable living?
Yeah.
Of course, to the backdrop of the high unemployment rates in this country at the moment, and we're being told, that they're falling. But again, what type of employment is being created? Unfortunately, there seems to be, particularly even in our own industry, there was difficulties with the what's called the JLCs, which are the minimum industry standards that Mandate Trade Union would have negotiated along with employers' groups. They have been eroded through various legal challenges. Unfortunately, the thrust of the action to date has been to erode terms and conditions,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to try and put in you know, reasonable flow of rights for people within which that they can live on. You know, we would strongly take the view there must be some definitive relationship between going to work and material existence.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, those two ends don't seem to be meeting at the moment.
No.
Which is why it's a central part of our industrial relations agenda, but it's also a central part of the way we campaign, the way we engage with government and all stakeholders in society. It's very much part of our agenda, making work pay.
Yeah. Well, it was interesting there on the news. I seen Michael Noonan talking about getting into a dialogue with the trade unions, and, you know, maybe that might lead to something substantial. That doesn't seem to be giving an awful lot of hope to workers, that we'll try a dialogue and see if it'll open the way for us to maybe get down to serious negotiation. I mean, is that, and I'm just maybe playing devil's advocate here, is that just pre-election bluster, or are they serious about why do we have to have a dialogue first? We know what the problems are. The government are telling us that we've got economic growth, we're looking at sustainable employment, but the, you know, your, you know, the statistics and the stories that are out there, and there's a hell of a lot of people are either struggling to get work still. I mean, we know lots of people who are struggling to get work still, getting turned down for the most basic of jobs because they tell them they're overqualified, or if they can get a job, they're getting offered something like an 8-hour or a 15-hour contract. And, you know, these are people who have mortgages. These are people who probably ended up in negative equity. They're probably at their wit's end trying to make ends meet. As you say, the two ends aren't meeting at the minute. And, I mean, why do we have somebody like Michael Noonan saying, okay, we'll look at maybe getting into a dialogue with the unions, and then we'll maybe that might lead to serious negotiation. You know, is that just pre-election bluster, or are you hopeful that maybe we can start pushing this agenda forward and quickly?
Well, like everything else, Mandate Trade Union is always an organisation that will engage in dialogue if it bears fruit.
Yeah,
but I suppose those types of statements, and it's difficult until such time as you can see, until anyone would get in around a table and have any such dialogue. The devil is always in the detail of
exactly
those things.
Yeah.
I mean, I've heard that statement from Michael Noonan, and indeed, as I mentioned, there is the Labour Minister, Jed Nash, has proposed a low pay commission on a statutory footing to look at the whole area of low pay, which we assume at this point will encompass areas around underemployment, but the devil is always in the detail of those things.
Yeah.
And in terms of that dialogue, we will have that dialogue, we will engage in that dialogue, but ultimately, also, we will pursue, like we're doing with Dunn's, on behalf of our members, an appropriate industrial relations agenda that will address those issues at workplace level.
Yeah.
There has been a lot of talk since the collapse of social partnership, and I should add, the employers' organisations were the first people to pull away immediately. I don't know whether it's a case of there's nothing like a good recession to make a bit of progress in their mind, but they were the first people to pull away from that social partnership table. Now, there are debates even within the trade union movement about how much that social partnership process delivered for workers. Did it actually deliver? We could probably all learn lessons from that. But ultimately, employers' organisations were the very first people to pull away and say, you know, we can no longer sustain this, and you will hear those arguments from employers. In fact, our Assistant General Secretary, Gerry Light, took the ISME to task and pointed out correctly that it appeared on the face of it that ISME seemed to be consistently against any kind of pay increases for workers. But of course, it's a defeatist logic, because unless, again, that there is money in the economy and workers have more in it, money in their pockets, well then they're simply not going to have that money to spend. So we at all times will engage in meaningful dialogue. Ultimately, whether or not that is an election promise or whether it's bluster or whether it's anything else, that will be borne out by the results that it achieves.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that we assess on an ongoing basis. And obviously we will integrate any developments on that front with our industrial relations agenda at workplace level.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, to date, in any event, there doesn't seem to have been any significant political will to address this whole area of underemployment. We would have made a presentation to a joint Oireachtas committee in about 2013, late 2013. So I agree with you.
Yeah.
The government are aware of the statistics and they are aware of the difficulties, but at the moment, there doesn't seem to be the political will to address it. If
yeah.
that changes, that's good, but I can't.
Yeah.
That is not borne out by the level of engagement that has occurred to date.
Yeah. And I mean, I know going across different industries and everything else, David, it's difficult, but, you know, workers in general have kind of suffered big time. As a result of this, if you want to call it recession or whatever, it's got so many labels now, I don't know what we should call it. But is there any sort of cohesion between the different trade unions and even at Congress level? I mean, like, day before Christmas, we seen, you know, Congress, you know, with regards to the water charges, and some of the unions seem to have flip-flopped on the water charge thing, for example. Is there cohesion between the unions that we all need to push forward together, or is some of them pushing their own agenda? You know, it would seem that, you know, I know we're talking specifically about the retail sector here, but, you know, workers across the board have suffered big time. You know, you think about the construction industry specifically, but all industries. And, you know, is there kind of a cohesion, a plan going forward where all the unions are going to I know they'll have individual issues, but I mean, even going back to the social partnership thing, you know, I don't think any of the employers will be rushing back to the social partnership table anytime soon. Not till there's something in it for them, as you say. But, you know, is there a cohesion with the unions? You say, you know, you meet individually, you talk, you know, amongst yourselves or whatever. Is there a plan going forward to fight on a united front?
Absolutely. I mean, our own General Secretary is currently President of the Irish Congress of Trade Unions. And I believe, you know, over the whole piece of, as you said yourself, the recession, you know, call it whatever, you know, so many names for it at this stage.
Yeah.
The Irish Congress of Trade Union has been absolutely consistent in relation to its position on a whole variety of issues, both from an industrial relations and a social perspective.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely. Obviously, within each trade union, you will have different issues. You will have issues that are possibly more relevant to the retail sector. You'll have issues that are more relevant to the health sector, you know, or whatever else.
And
you know, within the Irish Congress of Trade Union structure, there is the capacity, you know, for that. But I believe the Irish Congress of Trade Unions has been absolutely consistent across the board in relation to how it has challenged austerity and how it has highlighted it.
Yeah.
And you know, the actions that have been taken.
Yeah. Well, as I said, David, you know, we look forward to, as I say, we have government officials telling us and every opportunity and every news bulletin and in every newspaper that things are getting better. You know, people on the ground will tell you, well, you know, it's not getting better for me yet. So we'll watch with bated breath in the hope that the two sides would meet. And, you know, in regards to your own fight, we wish you the best of luck. And, you know, maybe we'll keep in touch and, you know, keep an eye on these things, because, you know, things like people now, you know, people are there, as I say, and they're getting told constantly things are getting better. And if things are getting better, great. You know, we like to give out good news as well. So maybe we'll talk again in the future, and we might be able to give people some more news about how things are going on both the a personal and a level to yourselves and mandate, and maybe on a more widespread level.
Absolutely, Mark, and thank you for having me on to highlight, I suppose, what we believe is an important issue. And I don't know whether things are getting better or not, but we take the view there's always room for improvement, and we'll continue to strive for that.
Absolutely, David. Listen, David, thanks very much for taking the time to talk to us this morning. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you very much, Mark.
Thank you.